Good morning, Chris.
Good morning, sir.
How are you doing?
I'm better now. Better now. Good.
Do you want to say something about this morning?
like an apology, a formal apology. I got nothing. I got nothing other than I got nothing. So I'll just do the details. So round seven, booted up the computer, had Chrome there waiting, came back here about 7:40-ish, saw that Chrome had crashed, then went to reboot Chrome, which somehow Chrome and the Mac operating system decided to go for a coffee break. And then it's been in reboot mode for the last 40 minutes. That's it.
Well, you're here now.
I'm here now.
And we're going to talk about our reflective practice, correct?
Sure. Let's do that.
Well, we're going to have some fun with this, right?
Yeah. Like,
it's not going to be okay, step one, step two.
No.
So one of the things we listed in the description of our talk today, of our presentation, is around sketchnoting. So do you want to show what you have so far this morning?
Okay. So absolutely I do. So here's so me doing drawings, me doing playing with words, me messing around with different sort of design elements is kind of just it's what my hands need to do for my ears to work. So at any given time, like my the journal that I carry with me to school is full of post-it notes stuck to it and different colored markers, writing, printing, scraps from found text. So I mix it up quite a bit. And I just find that my brain, has to make a choice between fascinating itself. So just, it's like I'm going through all these hyperlinks in my head. Someone says something, I'm like, oh, this makes me think of this and this and this and this. And I keep going off into the field. So in order for me to hang my focus, I find I have to capture it somehow. So as I was waiting, I did a couple things actually. As I was waiting, I did some meditation, which was, I don't know if it was helpful. And I'm just sort of scribbling, you know, my truth as I'm waiting for my computer to acknowledge that I'm in the room. So that was the, a part of my reflective practice, a part of also the, the capturing some of the ideas that you and I do on the weekly is something, some sort of a picture that, wait, I'll show your favorite. I know you weren't a big fan of the sparkly one. It's sort of putting together something that will not only help remind me, but also it sort of comes down to, you know, this element of reflective practice is also done, the decoded, we do it kind of out in the open as well. So at some point, I know that we're going to be posting a link for someone to make it easier to find. So there's a small element of this. I don't think it's not on the front end of when I'm doing it. I'd say 90-95% is kind of stream of consciousness stuff. And then just before I take a snap of it to use it for our website, some of the creative for the decoded creative, I might play with some of the coloring or, you know, erase a scribble line or something. So yeah. It's interesting to go back and look at some of them because some of them I don't instantly remember, like this one here. I don't instantly remember what it was that was fueling me there. And like that's just a big hot mess unless I can. Success, failure. Well, that's appropriate. Decoded. There we go.
I think for me, what's interesting is the fact that, like, for example, this morning, as you're in the middle of trying to make your tech work, get everything in order, you take the time to grab the pen and you start drawing and writing, which I think, like from my understanding of who you are, grounds you in a way.
Yeah.
I can imagine. Well, I was getting the text messages from you, and you know, they were not the cool, calm Chris Clough that I'm accustomed to. They're more the, you know, ready to toss something out the window. So I think in even like as practitioners, as teachers, what we do to help us reflect on what we're doing keeps us grounded, keeps us focused, because it's very easy to become unfocused. It's very easy to become discombobulated in a way, depending on what's happening in our work and what we need to do to kind of stay on track with our work. Would you agree with that? Okay, it looks like Chris stepped away for a moment. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to talk a little bit about using vlogging as a way to keep yourself reflecting on the work that you're doing, looking back to see if the goals you've set for yourself are being met. So let me give you an example of kind of how I started on that road. I guess my reflective practice has started, came from blogging. And when I started blogging, it was going to be done in a way to be able to monitor my progress around my own learning. So I was starting a new experience. I was starting like a project of sorts, and I wanted to be able to capture my learning as I was going through it without having to worry about sharing it in a non-digital way. Hey, welcome back, Chris. I'm just talking about the evolution of my reflective practice. So I'm just commenting on that it started with blogging, and it started from the need or the want to record my learning as I was going. And I wanted to do it in a digital format so that if I needed to share it with somebody, I'd be able to do it. If it was done in an analog way, like written in a book or something, it wouldn't be as accessible to people who are interested in looking at it. And, you know, there's no way that I would want to actually like pick up my book and give it to somebody, because it's kind of like my lifeline. So I went directly to blogging, and it was scary. It was scary because whenever I'd write a post and I'd hit publish, it would live in my corner of the internet, but it was still on the internet, right? It was still out there for people to run into. And then once I started giving out the address for people to go and see what I'm doing, why I'm doing it, how it's helping me or how it's not helping me, it was just always there for people to see. Anyway, that's how it started. If you want to, I'm going to fast forward to today where I can take my camera at work, my phone, and I can record 2 or 3 minutes of my thinking about what's happening at work or what's coming up at work or just a topic that I want to talk about. What happens with that is it gets recorded, gets thrown up on YouTube. So it's used for people to see if they want to kind of involve themselves in the topic that I've been talking about. But more importantly than that, it allows me to view it, to think about my thinking, and then to help me evaluate whether I'm moving forward, whether I'm moving backwards, what my next steps will be. So that's kind of like I just wanted to throw out a little picture of that as Chris left us, and now Chris is back.
Yeah, I have similar sort of stop points that you have. I think I had experiences in the classroom. I had two different things happening. I discovered that I wanted to share classroom experiences with family. So back in the day, starting with Twitter and the hospitality class that I was teaching, using Twitter to have a private account, and I could take snaps of what was going on in the classroom and the parents. It so happened that a lot of the parents in my school or a part of my school had Twitter accounts. So it was good, because that's sometimes one of those strange spaces where you're sending stuff out, but none of the people that you want to send it to are there. So part of me using Twitter was because I knew that the audience was there and they were willing to sort of play with Twitter. So I started doing that. And then I realized the kind of like the one side of it, me using Twitter to share student learning or any sort of, I guess, social media or digital media to share student learning was one half of my digital practice. The second half, I started to realize I wanted to share my thoughts on that. And I tried doing the straight up blogging. It didn't catch for me. I do it. I do it sometimes. What I really liked though was capturing audio and digital. So I, for a while, was just capturing my audio thoughts walking from class to class. And I would do, I have a bunch of voice memos on my phone from, oh geez, probably when I start doing those, I have some of those going all the way back to, well, not when I first got my iPhone, but I'm going to say I have at least 5 or 6 years of little bits of things that I was saying as I was walking between classes. And I like having that experience because sometimes I've been asked, well, how do you take the time to sort of like put these things together? Because the scheduling of reflective practice, I think, is it's kind of a critical piece to figure out for some teachers. And my answer is just walking class to class. Now, the audio, the fidelity isn't great because you're walking through the hall, there's announcements and all that kind of stuff. But what was more important to me was capturing it as it was sort of in the wild, like being able to grab it right when it was happening. And listening back and looking at some of those things has been really valuable to me. If it didn't always inspire me to new thinking, but it was great reminders of, you know, where I kind of went left, but there was a right. I didn't take that path. So it kind of reminds me of former options that I can sort of bring forward. Moving forward through that, I started doing some vlogging. And when what I really enjoyed doing was vlogging while walking home from work or being outside walking the dog in the morning. So I have a collection of those as well. And then somewhere between the two, when I started to play with digital media and being comfortable with hitting the post, you know, putting it out there for other people to see, I like how you said, so other people kind of run into it. I think that was entirely my thinking, is that, well, I seem to have made it through some of these hoops of just, I don't know, I guess there's a little bit of an embarrassment factor or a little bit of, you know, being uncomfortable or nervous about having your thoughts outside your own head. But once I kind of got beyond that, as in I was using Twitter and I was doing audio captures and I was communicating with parents as well, it seemed like a natural progression to say, well, how do I tap into what feels a little bit more authentic for me? And then that's where I started to use YouTube to do some vlog capture. And then within that frame, when you bring certain things into your life, like digital learning, it also brings people into your life. And that's where I encountered you and Stephen Hurley and some other people that introduced another kind of, I don't know if it was a window or a mirror, but another opportunity to capture that stuff. So that's sort of like bringing me up to now. And you and I messing around with Decoded podcast.
I think it's important to note that, I mean, for you and I, we can look back now and we can see a trajectory, right? Like we can see a beginning, a middle, and an end. And I don't mean end as in like final. I just mean, as we look back and we reflect on the journey of reflective practice, you can see that there's a variety of modes that we use. But I feel like, for example, I don't blog as much anymore, but I still do blog, just not as much. And the whole audio thing really caught my attention for a long period of time. And so when I look back, I can see the different, modes that I've used. So like blogging, so actually taking time to sit down and to type something out and write something up. And then moving into like audio podcasting type stuff with the reflection piece there, and then video. And then now it's like going back and forth between the different mediums, if you will, depending on how I'm feeling. So now that I've done the different, I've used different ways to reflect. Now, depending on how I'm feeling, is the route I'll take. So for example, generally speaking, when I want to reflect on the work I do and its connection to leadership in education, I tend to write a blog post. I'm not 100% sure why. I tend to write a blog post, and I have a leadership blog where that's kind of where I keep those thoughts and those reflections. Now, recently, I kind of took the vlogging and mixed it with the blogging with respect to my leadership and education. And I think the only reason I did that was because the initiative that I was participating in was around innovation and leadership. And so what I did there was I thought about, okay, how can I make this authentic and like hit the topic and meet my needs for my practice? Well, the answer was I'm going to vlog it and then use that. So what I did was, after that was over, I shared it with the person running the initiative. And I said, I don't know how other people are providing you with artifacts of their reflective practice or their journey as they try to innovate and lead at the same time. So this is what I did. I vlogged about it at different points in the process to share successes, to share failures, to share next steps, to share, you know, thoughts, ideas, concerns. Here they are. Here are three vlogs. You know, they're like 5 minutes each or something. This is how I've decided to reflect on my process, my journey. And sometimes it's not reflective practice. Like sometimes it's, you just want to record what you're thinking, record what you've done. The reflective component is when you revisit it and you consider what you talked about, how you talked about it, what you said, and then what it might do, like to give you direction as you move forward. So I think it's important that not everything we do is about the reflective practice. Sometimes it's just like, I need to get something out of my head. And there have been blog posts and podcasts that I've not revisited, you know, just having done created whatever was created was enough for me to kind of provide me with some direction moving forward. But the most powerful learning has come from revisiting, re-listening, and considering, like comparing, okay, this is how I'm feeling now, this is how I was feeling then. What's happened in between those two times that has me feeling better or has me moving in a direction where I feel like it's going to benefit my students or myself? And I think that's like the dynamic importance of considering a way to reflect. Like, I know some people will write a journal and that's great, but that's not what you and I do. You and I are more into the digital component of the reflective practice. We're experimenting and we're kind of coming to new ways of doing it through the old ways or the former ways, which now, you know, I talk about is more cyclical. Depending on what I want to do, I'll go back and I'll use the tool or I'll use the medium that will best serve my reflection at that time. And so there is a journey to it, but there's also the being open and dynamic with the journey and doing different things along the way. Like, I think you and I talking about this today is a great way to reflect on the things we've done to help us reflect.
Yeah, it's I totally connect with your, you know, sharing your vlog, sharing your digital portfolio with others. We talked about this. I was taking an AQ this year, and for probably 30% of the responses that were kind of part of the mandatory discussion pieces for the AQ, I submitted videos for. And I raised this because it challenged me when I go back and reflect on this. It challenged me because in posting videos, short YouTube videos into the learning environment, I did get some pushback. And I hadn't expected that. I got some pushback from some of my colleagues who noted that they noted that it was difficult for them to, I guess, absorb what I was throwing down. Now, it's not that they were adverse to it. It's not that they were adverse to it, but they did notice that they didn't learn as easily when it wasn't a written blog post. And I didn't change my practice because I felt like I was kind of rocking what was authentic for me. But it did make me think about, you know, when we send out one of these posts or you hang something in a public portfolio, that there'll be people within your audience that you might not be connecting with. And the discussion afterwards sort of bore that out. So, you know, I posted the video. That was sort of like the first response. I didn't continuously post videos after that, but I did engage in conversations around learning methods. And I actually offered additional ways that the individual could turn on some functionality within YouTube to use the subtitles and to find the... not the script for it. I'm dropping the words here. What's it called? You could find the transcript for it within YouTube. So they actually were able to read the words if they wanted to. One of the interesting, I guess, expansion points from getting used to using this medium is that it has, I think it's made me more eager, more hungry to create. I find it draws... using the digital tools, it draws me into using my creativity in different ways. And, you know, flipping between something that I might be drawing on the paper to scribbling something into one of my journals to then posting it online, I'm starting to get a deeper understanding of the creative practice. And this is really important for me because I'm so impulsive in how I create. I don't have a great method or a structure to how it comes out of me, but I'm starting to see the necessity for developing a structure only in so much as when I create a piece, whether it's a piece of poetry or writing or a podcast, I like how it slows me down a little bit because there'll be things that my brain... So when I conceptualize something I want to create, my brain doesn't automatically say, here are the barriers. So it just says, kind of go for it. And I tend to. And so, but what I have had happen before is then I hit a barrier. I'm like, oh, I've totally stalled the train now. And I kind of lose track of what it was I was trying to create. By having something on paper, by having some audio, by making a video, by having a blog and sort of existing in this space, I'm starting to be able to kind of problem solve even before I need to. And I think the, you mentioned something too, when I start to create something, it could start on paper, but kind of quickly I go, no, you know what? I can do this in video instead. And I might just kind of take that as a draft and then shift to video. So there are some posts that work better in one medium. And I guess this is one of the big pieces of learning from using this as reflective practice is that you can't force it. If you really want to hit something that feels like truth to you, you got to kind of go with the resource that is works best for you. And I think this might be, I haven't been in a discussion yet with colleagues or other people that have, let's say, a multi-layered portfolio where it says, how are we making sure that we're promoting this type of reflective practice where sometimes you're on paper, sometimes you're making a video, sometimes you might podcast, sometimes you might just use meditation. And there's an interesting space there to sort of look at reflective practice as far more multimodal so that we don't get kind of hemmed down in it has to be one specific way. I haven't helped anyone that tries to track my reflective practice, because I haven't always built it with the exterior in mind. I'm trying to make it as as connected with what I'm feeling in the moment and the learning that I'm having. And sometimes, in fact, trying to do that and connect it to student success is another layer of challenge. So
do you think, like, for someone starting off or considering how they might want to reflect on their practice, do you think it's important for them to consider how it will look like on the outside? Or is that to you totally secondary, and that the issue should be you need to find a way to reflect upon what you're doing to help you move forward and not really be concerned with how this might look on the outside?
You know, okay, I gotta kind of go beside that right now. I remember, in high school, I loved taking French, loved it. Like, I really enjoyed languages. It was something that fueled kind of all my other reason for being at school. I just really enjoyed being in that space. I enjoyed developing a new language, a new fluency. And I did French exchanges. I did a lot of experiential things around learning French. Much of what has sparked a bit of a traveler in me and a sort of a someone who sort of constantly is taking a peek at the world and just sort of paying attention outwardly came from the learning that I did in my travel and experience in that French class. I went to university and I decided to take French at university, and I failed out of it. I actually stopped taking French language when I was in university. It was bound to the book. It was bound to the classroom. There wasn't like a group where you could go sit and go for coffee and just chat. There wasn't any of the communities that were connected with it. When I think about developing, and I mean, there's a whole other discussion whether or not you're developing a reflective practice or a digital reflective practice. But if we make it about, if we try and find that middle landing ground, I think exposing yourself to other people's reflective practice methods is kind of critical. And then test driving it in a way that you feel safe, the way that you feel kind of creative. And definitely not getting too, you know, not beating yourself up if you really, really in your heart and soul, you're like, you want to be a podcaster, but then you give it a ride and you're like, oh man, like you can make a choice. I'm gonna grind it through and develop it. And but you don't have to stay there. There's lots of other options. I was just in a Twitter conversation yesterday, so DMing with a colleague, and they were talking about their reflective practice, but they're not much of a blogger, but they would like to become one. And at about the 3/4 mark of our DM conversation, I said, well, what about what we're doing right now? Is this co-blogging? And would you be comfortable with taking this whole DM string and posting it as your blog? And they said, I had never, you know, they would never thought of that. Never thought of that. So there's these sort of, I think you, to sort of see reflective practice in a broad fashion means spending time with people that are presenting different forms. And wherever you decide to start, realizing that not only is that your starting point, but there's a whole bunch of other people that are the exact same starting point, trying to figure out what to do. And staying open to those rabbit holes. So when you are at school talking about your reflective practice, I really don't think reflective practice should be some secret thing. So you're talking about your reflective practice. You're sharing your reflective practice in whatever mode you feel is most fruitful to you. And then sticking around afterwards for the discussion that comes out of your reflective practice.
I want to add that I think it's important that, so the way you just described it is awesome, but even in that, people don't need to follow how you've described it. Like, people don't need to stick around for a discussion after around your profession of your reflective practice. But I get where you're coming from. I just think at the end of the day, it's important to do it. And then it's totally custom to how you want it to be. So I know you and I go back and forth a lot, but that works for us, right? Like, we'll put something out and we'll share it with each other. And then we usually make a comment, and if we don't, that's okay too. But it's kind of a nebulous area with a true grounding, that the fact is that you can become better at what you do by taking time to reflect on it. And then my tidbit would be finding a way, like if you just want to sit and meditate on your thoughts for a few minutes each day, or however you want to do it, that doesn't get recorded anywhere, right? Like there's no, you just sit and you become one with yourself and you consider things and you do it in a way that benefits you. I call that meditation. So if you're going to do it that way, that's great as well. If you're going to record it somewhere so you can revisit it, that's okay too. And then that's where you begin to have like the complexity, right? Where will you record it? How will you keep it? Will you share it? Will you not share it? Will you discuss it with other people? Will you not discuss it with other people? And, you know, to be authentic to this experience, I have no problem talking to you about some of my reflections, but there are some people that I don't want to talk to about my reflective practice. I don't want to enter the work I do into another realm of how I live or where I live. You know, so there are colleagues that have no clue that I engage in a reflective practice by blogging, vlogging, podcasting. You know, they don't know. It's not something we talk about. And there's parts of what they do that I have no idea what they do or how they do it or whether they do it. So it's a very wide open topic. It's a very wide open space with lots of entry points. And I think that's why I like it so much, because there are entry points. You were talking earlier about poetry, and I completely forgot, or maybe I don't pay attention to, sometimes you push out poems. And the first couple of times you did it, like when I started getting to know you years ago, I was like, oh, this guy's a writer. I never considered that the poetry, it's not just writing, it's coming from somewhere inside of you. And wherever it's coming from needs to be expressed. And that's one more layer that you have that I don't. And it's not something that is like, it's not something that I think I'd like to do. So I think it's really cool that you harness that, you use that to help you work through some of the things you're considering or thinking about, and you push it out there for people to see. And I've seen people interact with you over your writing, your poems, and that's very cool too. I think that, you know, some people need to be very physical when they reflect. They run or they exercise, and while they're doing it, they're going over the things that they've done in their day or the day before, and they're considering it. And that's how they deal with their reflections. They do it in a very physical way. So I think it's important to note there are many different ways to do it. You and I have just chosen a digital path as the way that we prefer to do it right now.
Yeah, a couple different things come to mind in you mentioning that. You have something similar as well, though. Your video development that has, you know, some of the stuff that you've posted in relation to hockey and sports, I would argue is kind of like that transitional piece between using your digital reflective practice and sort of using the tool in a different way. So you're sort of becoming creative. You're expressing that sort of creative side through your videos. That's how I perceive it. It might not feel, you may not be thinking that on the inside, but I see it that way. I see that you're using some of the tools. Like, it's funny, you know, I think about when I see the videos that you've posted into the Decoded YouTube site, I wonder to myself, is it the stuff he does as a side hustle to his reflective practice that's making his decoded ones that tend to be a little bit more specific to school context, which one's making which one better? Like, you have a nice sort of synergistic flip between the two of them. I find when I'm pushing out a poem or a piece of writing that I'm doing, or any, you know, if I take a photo, if I'm sort of like putting out what I feel to be sort of just another piece of me, I still feel like I'm becoming better at expressing myself and my whole self. And, you know, and again, that's, as you said, that's not for everyone. Not everyone wants to sort of put stuff there and necessarily engage in the broader conversation. And that's cool too. And somewhere within this conversation, I think that's trying to find that harmonizing point between a digital portfolio and reflective practice. Somewhere in the middle, you have digital reflective practice. And for me, I've come sort of naturally to this, but I've come into the spaces where other people are not where I thought they would be. So a really fine slice, asking someone to be a part of the Chasing Squirrels podcast, and they were on board until their job changed. And then they said, well, I don't think I can talk about my practice anymore because my job has changed and I'm not really comfortable now talking about it. Or in another case, having someone come up to me in educational leadership and genuinely and earnestly asking, are we allowed to reflect on our practice like that? Like, are we allowed to post our thoughts like that? And this is someone that's further along their EDU job than I am. And my flat response is yes, to each their own. But it gave me a pause, because if this is someone who's senior to me and I would consider them being, you know, a solid leader for me, asking me if we're actually allowed to do something like this shows that there's interesting pockets here of either discomfort or the just not knowing, can we do this? I will say for me, someone has sort of said before, you know, I don't have the courage or the bravery to do that. And that's probably a whole other conversation. I actually come at this in a very practical fashion, is that I want to represent, I want to push out my thinking in a way that I'm kind of taking up space in EDU so that someone can run into my thinking. I actually do want people to run into my thinking. My hope is that they come back and they chat with me a little bit, but I'm also okay if they don't, because underneath that, I feel like I'm being creative and sort of expressing myself in a way like you and I are expressing ourselves right now.
Awesome. Well, on that note, Chris, it looks like our time has come to an end to talk about reflective practice with respect to the whole MAD PD structure. So it was a lot of fun. Thanks for putting it together and for making time and space for us to talk about our reflective practices.
Thank you for being a safe space to land.
No worries.
And kind of just jumping in as I'm texting you and saying, we got to flip this and you're going to have to get it started. So happy to have anyone that cares to learn more, reach out. You can find me at Chris J. Clough on Twitter.
And you can find me at rchids on Twitter.
And have a great Sunday.
Yeah, you too. See ya.